Happy hump day. Welcome into the Midday Sports Zone. I'm Russ Brown, Daniel Shirley alongside Stan Autry on the rundown today. We might need to get Stan on a little earlier. We got to talk Georgia
Tech. It is 11:30 today.
Yes. He's coming on earlier.
He couldn't do 12:30. Sorry.
But we've got to do we've got to talk. You probably did. We got to talk about Georgia Tech spring football. We got to talk about Georgia Tech baseball, and we got to talk about the PGA Tour.
So Stan's going to do two segments.
Stan's going to join us at 11:30, and we're going to go right to 1 o'clock. He doesn't know that. No, I'm just kidding. So we'll get into all of that. Obviously, a lot of Braves talk. The draft is it's draft eve. Are you as excited about the draft as you usually are? I feel like I'm getting less excited about things the older I get.
I'm going to see Endgame at 6 o'clock. So,
so that's a no for you.
And my 49ers have the second pick, so I'm not going to see the 49ers pick. But I'm actually excited to see what the Falcons are going to do, but I hope they do it after I get home from the movie because I have to work after the movie. So I'm hoping they do it like at 9:15 as opposed to trading up in the top two or three and then making a pick then. But we have some alternate plans if they do make some kind of a crazy trade to move up really, really high. But, I'm excited about it. I'm kind of excited about the whole weekend. I'm way more excited about seeing Endgame, sorry, than I am the draft because it's, I mean, that's a big deal for our family. But, yeah, I'm excited about seeing what's going to happen. I think this is a pivotal draft for the Falcons. I really do.
It is. It is a pivotal draft. Maybe the excitement thing is a product of getting older because there's a lot of other stuff that happens in your life. You know, but like the boy's 10 today.
Sure.
It's a big day. He's 10, the big 1-0. And I'm old, but which I shouldn't even say that around you. Yours is going to college.
He's going to high school. He's graduating high school next week.
That's crazy.
His last day of classes is tomorrow.
That is insane. Oh, my gosh. That is insane. But you know, and I think the other part of it, too, is, you know, the Falcons, the move is to trade back if you can, right? But you have to have somebody to dance with you. And I think that from a talent standpoint in this draft, what is the difference between the 15th overall player and the 35th overall player? Is there a big gap there? I don't think there is, which means it's probably going to be very difficult to trade back because everybody feels like they can just stay put, keep their picks, and get the player that they want.
Right.
In that case, the player the Falcons are going to get, I feel like they can get a contributor. I feel like they can get a starter. But it's not going to be somebody that blows your skirt up. You know, it's not going to be some franchise-changing player. So there's that. So there's that part of it. The other part, like you said, it's a pivotal draft for the franchise. But big picture, the new coach can overhaul the roster next year because there's a lot more cap freedom.
Right.
So it's like I'm just kind of sitting back with my arms folded to see what Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff are going to do. As a fan, I'm going to hope that it works. But if it doesn't, they're gone, so I'm not that worried about it.
Well, and it feels like you said, again, I do think at 14, if they stayed at 14, and again, fingers crossed for me, so they do it after I get done with the movie, if they stay at 14, they can get a good player who can help them immediately.
Yeah.
And if they, you know, again, the draft starts at 8. I've been timing this out all week, trying to figure out.
You're going at 6?
I'm going at 6.
It's a three-hour movie, right?
God,
we're nerds, aren't we?
If they start at 8, the first pick will be, what, 10 after 8?
Probably, thereabouts.
There's 10 minutes between each pick. Not everybody's going to take 10 minutes.
Right, and if there's trades, that backs it up.
Right, but if they trade up,
then you're screwed.
Then I'm screwed. But, I mean, we've already got everything set up in case.
Do you have an in-game contingency
plan?
Yes,
we do. Jason Butt and I have already discussed this.
Priorities, man.
But we do have a universal desk that can read the story.
Sure.
But we want to post a live discussion chat with our fans, with our readers.
Mm-hmm.
If they, once the pick is in, we're going to hit the button on this thing to post something.
Yeah.
And let the readers come in and talk about the pick.
Very cool.
Well, if that happens, you know, look, again, if you think if they're going to average 7 or 8 minutes a pick, right? That's what Jason said.
Mm-hmm.
If they stay at 14, that'll be 9:30.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be home by then.
Yeah, you're good to go.
But if they trade up to 5, That's where the contingency plan kicks in. Yeah. And Jason and I have already built in for that.
And that chat gets a lot more interesting.
Yes, it does.
So I guess to say I'm excited about the draft, I'm not. And there's obviously a lot of factors to go into that. I'm more curious than excited.
I think that's a good word. I think that's a good way to look at it. It's curious. Yeah.
Are they going to trade up? Which I just don't. I mean, I think it's more justifiable this year than years they've done it in the past, but I just don't think it's the right thing to do because you need so much. You need an offensive lineman. You need – I think you need a tackle and an end, but at least a tackle. You definitely need a corner. There's no way around that. You have to get a cornerback in this draft. And that makes things complicated because I don't think – you know, and so the profiles we were reading yesterday, I mean, aside from the – core philosophy that you build a team inside out, I think Cody Ford and Christian Wilkins would help this team more than Greedy Williams would, but at the same time, what's the gap from Greedy Williams to the next corner compared to Cody Ford to the next lineman and Christian Wilkins to the next tackle? That's something else you got to weigh as well. And then what if that stuff starts flying off the board and they're just in love with this kid from Florida State and they think he's the next great pass rusher and they take him anyway?
There are so many different ways that this can go. I mean, there really are. It's all over the place with all the different places, all the different ways this can go. And I think that's what makes it so intriguing for the Falcons, especially because you kind of said no man's land. That's the phrase you've used about where they're picking because they're not high enough up to make a big splash. And again, like you said, they're probably not going to move back, and what are they going to get at that spot? But it certainly is going to be interesting to see where they are and where they go and who they pick. I think that's going to be really, really fun to watch.
Well, you know, looking at the cornerback position real quick, and I think this is what's going to work against the Falcons this year, which also tells you why Greedy Williams may be the pick at 14. And we have looked at a lot of mock drafts and a lot of lists, and you know, it's just an opinion at the end of the day. But Scott Wright released his overall rankings for the players, individual players. He ranks Greedy Williams as the 34th best player. He's fourth on his cornerback list. And all the corners, Byron Murphy is his top corner, Rocky Sin is his number two corner, DeAndre Baker is his number three corner, Greedy Williams is his number four corner. Those four have a 1-2 grade, like late first, early second round grade, according to Scott Wright. But what makes things complicated for the Falcons is Greedy Williams is the only one over 6 feet tall.
Yeah.
And that's the type of cornerback they like. Now, then all the corners after that, Lonnie Johnson Jr., Sean Bunning, Jawan Williams, Trayvon Mullen, Justin Lane, from Greedy Williams down to Justin Lane, all of those guys are over 6 feet tall. So do you wait and get the corner in the second round?
Who fits you. Yeah.
That fits what you're looking for. I don't know. And Dan Quinn's scheme has had success with Robert Alford and Desmond Trufant in the past. So you don't have to have a cornerback over 6 feet tall. But anyway, that makes things look interesting to me in terms of what they could do. And then, of course, you've got the defensive tackle position. Quinnen Williams is expected to be gone. Jeffrey Simmons expected to be gone. Ed Oliver expected to be gone. Dexter Lawrence, is he going to be gone?
At 14?
Yeah.
No.
No. That might be your guy.
Which is,
and Scott Wright's got him as the 10th best player in this draft with a first-round grade. But at 6'4", 342.
And athletic as hell.
That might be your guy.
Look, Russ, I'm telling you, this time last year, there were people saying Dexter Lawrence was going to be the number one pick in this draft.
Yeah.
And he had a great junior year. Now, he did get suspended for the playoff.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't play against Notre Dame or Alabama. But he had a great junior year until then. So I don't know if it's the suspension. I don't know what it is. But he's big. He's athletic. He's strong. He's quick. I don't know why he's dropping. I'm seeing him like, people are talking about him in the second round.
Well, it's got to be the for lack of a better term, steroid thing. PED. We'll say PED.
Right.
And I mean, is they're going to bring him in. They're going to talk to him about it. They're going to ask him about it. I'm sure they're going to ask the Clemson coaches about it. And it just, I guess it comes down to, do you believe their story or not?
Right.
And if you believe Clemson's story, I don't think that should hurt him. But if they don't buy it, then yeah, he's probably going to drop. Because the last thing you need to do is spend the first round pick on a guy that's going to be, look, Randy Gregory, right? You don't want to spend the first round pick on a guy that's going to be suspended all the time. So that's a gamble that you have to weigh. So that's what that position's looking like. The other position, and I'm looking at guards here because I just get the impression more and more they're looking at guards. You've got Cody Ford right there at the top of the list, the only guard with a first-round pick out of Oklahoma. He may be listed as a tackle on some websites. If the Falcons take him, he's a guard.
Well, he played tackle in college, right? Last year.
Yeah. But I do believe that if the Falcons take him, he would be a guard. Now, one of the things about the draft that we don't really talk about this a lot, but it is something that I weigh, and I think it's important. You have guys in this draft that are seniors, or in this case of Kobe Ford, he's a redshirt senior, and I think that doesn't get taken into account very much. People don't talk about that a lot, but I think it matters here because the thing about it is, if you take Cody Ford. All right, his birthday is not listed on this page I'm looking at, but he's 22 years old. And you know, if he's 23 when the season starts, you're going to get about 6 or 7 good years out of him versus a kid that's coming out as a junior that wasn't in school for 5 years. You're going to get 2 extra seasons with that player. So I think that's something you have to factor. I don't know how I would imagine that varies from team to team and player to player. But also think with Cody Ford, that's something you got to think about too is, you know, for example, if they were to take Dexter Lawrence, he's a junior, right? The kid's 20 years old. Cody Ford is 22.
Yeah, I can't find his birthday. I find his year. He was born in 97. But
I don't think they know.
I can't find the actual date.
His Wikipedia page literally says born circa 1997, like he's an Egyptian pharaoh or something. So I guess if the Falcons do draft Cody Ford, there's a story there for Jason Butt to dig into, right?
He's like one of those baseball players from Cuba who you don't actually know how old he is.
Oh, but mercy.
Jason was really impressed with him.
Yeah.
Really, really liked him. So...
I mean, as long as they don't do anything crazy. I mean, I'm not, you know, bowled over by Greedy Williams or Cody Ford or either you could say Dexter Lawrence or Christian Wilkins. I mean, I'm not going to sit there and do backflips, but maybe for Dexter Lawrence. But you know, and if they do take Dexter Lawrence to that pick, people are like, oh, that was a reach. But I just, if it's one of those four players, I think I'm okay. But if they, like the kid out of Florida State, What's his name? Brian? Oh gosh, the kid out of Florida State that everybody that's right there Brian Burns.
Brian Burns, right?
Right. And Jason's talked about him. I mean, I'm not saying Brian Burns isn't a good player. I mean, you've got a guy that could be there at linebacker in Devin Bush that some people say is the best player in the draft. It's not a knock on a kid like that if the Falcons take him. It's just they don't need. Well, they do need an edge rusher, but they've already paid $12.8 million to Vic Beasley.
Right.
So they don't need to draft that position.
Well, and the thing about it is if you got to 14 and Devin Bush is the best player in this draft, like Lewis Riddick said, and you took him, how would you react? If he turns out to be the best player in this draft and you got him at 14 –
But where's he going to play? That's my question. What?
Well, you move somebody. I mean,
you're not moving Deion Jones.
Well, maybe he plays next to Deion.
He might be the. But what if you're in a dime package? One of them, you're going to have your first round pick sitting on the sideline.
Well, but that's what they're saying about this guy is that he can play in a dime package.
Yeah, but you okay? I'm sure he can. But you already have Deion Jones. That's what I'm saying. You have Deion Jones. Deion Jones is the prototype. The reason Roquan Smith went in the first round, the reason some people are saying this guy's the best player in the draft, is because Deion Jones, who was a second-round pick, literally, in my opinion, transformed the position. You already have that player.
What if he's better than Deion Jones?
Then you got to take him.
I mean, I'm not saying he is. I'm just
I refuse to believe he's better than Deion Jones.
Yeah, yeah.
That guy is incredible. I mean, he's just absolutely incredible. But
I'm with, look, I would not – And that's what they say is, oh, we're going to take the best player available. Well, if he's at 14 and he's the best player, you don't. What do you do? 14's a tough spot.
You know what you do? You quit screwing up drafts so that one day you get to a point where you can just take the best player available and not worry about it. But that dog left the barn. That cow left the barn, or the horse. Maybe it was the horse. I don't know. Could it have been the pig? I don't know. But somebody left that a long time ago. A long, long time ago. So it is what it is. You got to play the hand you're dealt, and they haven't dealt themselves a very good hand, but maybe they'll come away with a good player. We got to take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about that Georgia Tech game from last night. We'll check in with Stan Autry in about 15 minutes. That and more as we continue right after this. /11:19, Russ Brown, Daniel Shirley back with you here on the Midday Sports Zone. So last night, Georgia Tech took the season series from Georgia with an 8-6 win at SunTrust Park, which and this series is finally moving to a weekend. So that's the big takeaway for me from this. But both programs obviously highly ranked, and they played in front of 18,000 people last night at SunTrust Park, the largest attendance for a college baseball game this season by 6,000 people.
And I believe when they play it on a weekend and they play one at Georgia Tech and one at Georgia and the third one at SunTrust, I think you'll see that attendance go up.
I think you will.
I really do.
Especially if these two programs stay where they're at right now. I mean, that was an 11-4 matchup last night.
Because Georgia Tech's kind of come out of nowhere this year. Both of them have, really.
Yeah, they have. Well, see, the thing about Georgia Tech's problems the last few years is they've had injuries to their pitching staff. And they've still dealt with that a little bit this year, but for the most part, they've stayed healthy.
Yep.
And that's been kind of the bugaboo. And this is also goes back to something Danny Hall did 3 or 4 years ago to kind of change the program to be more pitching-oriented. So basically, he changes the program to be more pitching-oriented, and then they get hurt. It's just kind of blown up in his face until now. And then the same thing with Georgia. I mean, when Scott Strickland took over, I mean, they were like the Braves bullpen, right? But now you look at Georgia's rotation, it's one of the best in the country. And no surprise, that's why you see these teams as highly ranked as they are. Obviously both teams are going to be in the College World Series, right? Or at least in the tournament, not in the World Series per se.
Right, right.
But both of these teams. You could very well see both of these teams in Omaha. That would be really cool.
I think so, I think you'll see both teams host a regional.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how the NCAA likes to do that? Well, they'll pair these two teams up and make them play a super regional against each other, would be unfortunate because they're both.
It'd be epic and unfortunate all at the same time.
It's unfortunate because they both could make it to Omaha if they were seated right. So hopefully the NCAA wouldn't do something like that.
Yeah. I saw this stat last night from Andy Demetra. He's the voice of Georgia Tech. This is one of those things where you can manipulate stats to say a lot of things. Kind of take it with a grain of salt. But the top five teams nationally in fewest hits allowed per inning, Georgia's number one, UCLA's number two, Bradley's number three, Louisville's number four, West Virginia's number five. Georgia Tech has played four of those five teams. I think West Virginia's the one team they haven't played, and they're 6-4 in those 10 games.
It's about beating good teams, man. It really is. I mean, look, you got to take care of a business against the bad teams for sure, but you've got to be able to beat good teams because you're going to face, even if you host a regional, you're going to face a good team as a number two seed probably in the regional. And then in super regional, you're going to face one of the best teams out there. So, they've beaten good teams this year for sure. And let's hope both teams can keep it going because, I know people say it all the time, we hate their teams or whatever. We want all the local teams or state teams to do well. And it's first time – I mean, really, Russ, this is first time since you and I have been doing a show together that Georgia and Georgia Tech baseball have been relevant.
Mm-hmm. No doubt about it. Real quick on that stat I threw out there, I was curious about this. How many of those four were three-game series? Georgia Tech played Bradley in a midweek way back at the beginning of the season. And so
that was one game.
I'm sorry. No, I apologize. Not Bradley. West Virginia. Yeah. They played them on a Saturday, but it was that first weekend of the season where they bring they'll bring three teams in, and this is like a round robin, and it was Illinois, Chicago, Richmond, and West Virginia. So Georgia Tech beat West Virginia 5-4 in 11 innings on one game. The UCLA game, the UCLA was a series. It was a weekend series. I think the Bruins were third at the time. They're still, they may, are they number one right now? I can't remember. But anyway, they won one out of those three. Then they took two out of three from the Bulldogs, but those were all midweek games. So, you just can't put a lot of stock into the midweek stuff as it translates because you're not throwing your best pitchers. And then, of course, the series against Louisville, they took two out of three in that one.
According to Baseball America, which is, I'm not sure if it's the one, but it's one of the ones. UCLA, yes, is number one in the country right now.
There you go. And so they'll have, I mean, and obviously, but I was going to say, you know, the strength of schedule is going to help them. But obviously, I mean, you play in the ACC or the SEC, you don't really have to worry about strength of schedule, do you?
No, not really.
And so the Yellow Jackets now will take on Clemson this weekend in Atlanta. You going for that one?
Oh, no.
Don't get started. I don't need to get you started.
Clemson has fallen apart.
Oh my gosh.
They've lost eight straight games to bad teams.
You ready to fire that coach? What's other win the series this weekend? That's how baseball works,
well,
right?
Well, I mean, they swept North Carolina. They beat two of, they took two or three from Louisville.
That's baseball.
And now they can't beat Duke and Florida State and Winthrop. So not. And they played 20 innings against Georgia.
Yeah.
And lost that game when they probably should have won that game. No, I'm not going. I'm probably going to go see Endgame again Saturday. So
you're crazy. That's nuts. You're wild. Georgia heads to Stark Vegas to take on Mississippi State this weekend. And then for the rest of the year, they'll have a midweek game against the Citadel, then three at home against Florida, and then a road trip to Jacksonville State, which is just odd. And then they'll have a three-game series against Auburn and wrap it up in mid-May with a three-game set against Alabama before the SEC Championship. That'll be in Hoover starting May 21st, the regionals. May 31st, the Super Regionals, June 7th, and if they can make it to the College World Series, June the 15th. And that would, I mean, that's, unless they get paired in a Super Regional, and you have to admit, that Super Regional between Georgia and Georgia Tech would be a lot of fun.
It would be fun, man.
But it would be really cool to see both of these teams in the College World Series.
It'd be better to see them both, it'd be better to see them play each other in Omaha than play in a Super Regional. And you said Georgia Tech's 11 right now. Georgia is 4.
Mm-hmm.
So you think Georgia Tech's going to move up?
I don't know. It's a midweek game, so I'm not sure. I mean, I don't know how much they look at that stuff.
Yeah.
And, I've got one buddy in particular that thinks they should just get rid of midweek games. I mean, just because it's
– just play series all season?
Well, when you get to the – well, what happens is you get to these midweek games. So most teams have – they're, you know, your Friday starter is your best, right? That's the number one guy in your rotation. Then you got your Saturday starter is your number two, and your Sunday starter is your number three. So you've got that going on, right? And then you get to your midweek game. Now, everybody's got a, quote, air quote, midweek starter. That is the equivalent to the sixth starter on a baseball team, a long reliever. We've seen with the Braves, like Touki Toussaint, when he came out of the bullpen, not Touki Toussaint, when he made his last start. So if you get in a jam over the weekend, that guy can come in and give you some long relief, some quality long relief if you need it. But what ends up happening is when you get to that midweek game, if you haven't used your bullpen over the weekend, it turns into Johnny Holstaff. So this guy's going to pitch two innings, this guy's going to pitch an inning, this guy, just to keep everybody fresh. So it's basically like a spring training game. Now, some may argue, no, you need to keep the midweek games for that very purpose, because what you don't want to do, because you're only playing six games in a two-week set, you know, you don't want some guy sitting in the bullpen rotten because he's not getting any action for 2 weeks. So it's kind of six and one, half a dozen of the other, I guess.
But yeah.
I would rather not see it because it just – or maybe – because it just – you can't take it – again, Georgia and Georgia Tech are two of the best teams in the country. Georgia Tech takes two out of three, right? 18,000 in SunTrust Park. It's really exciting. Georgia and Georgia Tech have not faced each other's best starters yet.
Right. I mean, and that's the thing, and I'm telling you, that's why I think the game – when they play this in a series, is that going to start next year?
I think so.
So next year. So let's say they meet in mid March, maybe early March, whatever. And they play a three game series, and they play one game in Athens, and everybody's going to be really excited because last night I forgot they were playing each other.
Mm-hmm.
that those games get lost in the shuffle. And I'm sorry, Georgia, Georgia Tech, when they play each other, should never get lost in the shuffle.
Right. But it's a Tuesday night.
I know. Yeah. But that won't happen when they're playing a three-game series because everybody's going to be talking about it. Everybody's going to focus on it. And it doesn't matter when they play it. It's going to be the talk of the state for that weekend. I know there's other stuff going to be going on too, but they're going to play, probably play one year. They'll play the first game in Athens and then second game at Tech, third game at SunTrust, and then they'll rotate it. That game at SunTrust every year, I'm telling you, it's going to be 25,000 people.
I think
there.
So. I mean, it's already big, obviously. There were 18,000 there last night. What's that going to look like on a Sunday afternoon?
When right. And you got your best pitchers going against each other.
Right. It should be a lot better.
It should. It's going to be a great. It's going to be fun. I mean, it that's what happened to Clemson, South Carolina. Mm-hmm. They used to play like two games in Clemson in like end of February and then two games in Columbia in like end of March. And they were playing four games. And the two coaches got together and said, "Why don't we play it as a series?" And they rotate. They go Clemson, Columbia, and then a third site. Usually it's Greenville, which you've been in that stadium, I think. Mm-hmm. The drive.
Little Fenway.
Yeah. So now they're going to do then Charleston's one year, South Carolina's the minor league stadium in Columbia one year. There's several parks in the state of South Carolina that can host that. Augusta, North Augusta maybe one year. So, but that's that series, that rivalry, it was always good, but it took off after that.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's a bigger deal than the basketball game between those two schools for sure.
Really? Well, and look, and this could be the case for Georgia and Georgia Tech too, because both of their baseball programs obviously are doing very well and have in the past. I mean, basketball is a different conversation, right? So, anywho, looking forward to it. It should be a lot of fun. And I'm glad both teams are good this year, the year leading into it. Because the anticipation and the excitement was already going to be there. This just adds to it a little bit more. We'll take a break. Stan Autry is going to join us. We'll talk about Georgia Tech spring game coming up on Friday. We'll dip our toe into the waters of golf with Stan as well. That and more as we continue right after this. Yeah. 11:34, Russ Brown, Daniel Shirley with you. Time to talk some Georgia Tech and a little golf with our man Stan Autry. He covers the Yellow Jackets for whiteandgold.com. What's up, Stan? How you doing?
Hey, Russ. How are you? It'd be a good day to be on the golf course today.
Yeah, oh, there's no doubt about that. It's absolutely gorgeous out there right now, and which I need to know that it's going to be clear and there's no chance of pop up showers because I'm probably going to be out there about 6 hours. I'm not a very good golfer, Stan. Oh,
sounds like we lost Stan.
Did we lose Stan? I think we lost Stan.
I think we lost Stan.
Man, that was some.
That was quick. He didn't like what you were talking about, so he hung up on you.
He won't hear it.
That was quick.
He won't hear of it. Russ, you're a good golfer. I won't hear of it.
He's like, no, I can't talk to these dudes, these clowns anymore.
I don't. Your game is not good enough.
I know Russ is not a good golfer. He's a liar and a clown, and I'm going to hang up on him. And that's exactly what happened. So, we do need to get out on the. We do need to get out on the course sometime and play. I mean,
we really do. We're having some connection issues there with Stan. I was talking to Stan during the break, and then he comes on, and now I think he can hear me, but I can't hear him. And who knows? But anyway, the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets with their spring game coming up on Friday night. You know, one of the conversations that everybody wants to have is about the attendance. I don't understand this. Who cares?
I don't care.
It's not relevant. Nope. It's not relevant to anything. Never has been, never will be.
There is, look, the only thing less relevant than a spring game is the attendance at a spring game. And I know why Kirby got all, oh, let's get 93K and all that. I mean, I know that's why. I mean, I understand what he was doing. And, I mean, Dabo Swinney does the same thing. Hey, let's get everybody out here. They want to be able to show off to the recruits, look how much our people care.
Right.
That's what they. But
all
it doesn't
is.
Matter.
It doesn't.
Doesn't matter.
It really doesn't. And, you know, like for the attendance for the Georgia spring game was announced at 52,000. There weren't 52,000 people in that stadium.
No way. And Seth even tweeted out, I'm trying to figure out who they're trolling with this because there's no way there were that many people at this game.
I mean, and then it doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't.
I remember there was a Georgia Tech spring game in 2014 where it was 40 degrees. and raining, and there were like 2,000 people there. Everybody made fun of them. All that team did was go on to beat Georgia and win the Orange Bowl. It doesn't matter. It
doesn't matter in a little bit. And I know why the coaches are doing it. I'm not criticizing Kirby. A lot of coaches do it. I mean, Alabama said there were 61,000 people at their game because there were 60,000 at Clemson's game, and they wanted to be more at their game than there was at Clemson. And there were not.
I don't know
why people care about that stuff.
Well, and one of the things I didn't understand, well, we can get into that later. We got Stan back on the line with us. Stan, can you hear me okay now?
Yeah, I'm in the, going to see my mom, and I'm driving through the mountains, so I hit a bad cell, I guess.
Oh, no worries, no worries. Well, we were just talking about the spring game coming up on Friday night. And why are people so preoccupied with attendance for spring games?
Well, I think part of the problem is for the Tech people is that Georgia set such a high bar a couple of years ago, and there's always that rivalry between those two schools. You know, it's never going to be the same. So I think the Georgia people like to poke fun at the Tech people because, you know, they can't get 15,000 people to their spring game. I think that's part of it.
But, Stan, do the recruits care about that stuff? I mean, do they look around and say, oh, my God, there's 50,000 people here. This is where I want to go to school. I can't believe that people look at that kind of stuff and think, I mean, at least the players, that's part of their decision-making.
No, I don't think it matters to the players. I think they're more concerned about important things like what the uniform practice jersey looks like, how many stripes are on it. That's what matters to those guys. I think the attendance at the game is more important to the alumni and the people that give the money. Yeah. I think that's where that's important.
No,
so, you know, we'll see. And I'm curious to see how many people are going to turn out on Friday because there is more interest, I think, than it has been in a long, long time.
Sure.
We'll see if they can get their 20,000.
Oh, there's no question about it. I think the first Friday night they did, I want to say there was like 19 or 20,000 there. But then again, you never know what the weather's going to be in, you know, Atlanta on a Friday and everything goes into that. But as far as what's going to happen on the field, do you think we're going to get a little bit of a preview of what you may see in the fall? Or is this going to be, you know, the type of spring game we've seen in the past where, you know, sixth running back on the depth chart's the star and he's not even on the travel roster come fall?
I think he's going to play just about everybody. I mean, because everybody's been working and he's been using everybody in practice. And I think you're going to see a lot of different people. But I think you're also going to see, hey, this is the offense they're going to run. This is what it's going to look like. And this is what the defense is going to look like. And this is the style they're going to play. So you'll be able to pick up a lot of stuff as far as generic things about what the new program will look like. But I think as far as personnel, you know, you're not going to be able to tell a whole lot.
Stan, is there one guy who you're really looking forward to seeing how they kind of fit with maybe it's a new position or just a new role or anything like that that maybe you haven't heard the coaches talking about this the last couple of weeks?
Well, we all want to see how the quarterback thing is going to shake out. And one of the new guys who's kind of developed in the spring is a guy named Liam Byrne, who is a walk-on quarterback. And he's running third string right now. And some of the other guys who have the offensive linemen kind of rave about what the guy's been able to do. So I don't know how much he's going to get to play and run or throw. But it's kind of intriguing to have a name of a guy we didn't really even know about 2 months ago, is going to play football on Friday night.
Is there anything else in particular that you're curious to see or maybe excited to see on Friday night?
Well, I want to see how the defense is going to line up and how they're going to play. They got problems depth wise, numbers wise, body wise up front. I'm going to see how he does that. And he's also had guys playing both sides of the ball. I wouldn't be surprised to see Jahaza Lee play offense and defense, and some other guys do the same thing, which is kind of unheard of, but, you know, it'll certainly be interesting for the spring game.
David, what about this offensive line? You know, what? How big of a change is it? We've talked about quarterbacks. We talked about now they got tight ends. They haven't had tight ends for a while. But how big of a difference is this for the offensive line to go to this new kind of a scheme?
Well, I had got a story today on the white and gold about how the offensive line is different and what kind of impact Brent Key has made on that offensive line since he was hired. And the main thing, he says he's got 20 guys in his offensive line group, which is more than he's ever had anywhere before. Now, you know, he's not going to play 20 guys on the offensive line, but his point is, you know, you're going to find out who the best guys are. And so when it's November and you start losing guys that get hurt or dinged up or whatever, you got more than five or six guys to choose from. And you can move a guy from one guard spot to the other, or even move him to tackle if you need to. And he's saying that's the kind of flexibility that they've got now that maybe they haven't had in the past. And he's got a couple of new guys. You know, he's got this Brandon Sowers, who's come in with a grad transfer from Vanderbilt. He's going to come in and start at guard. So even though they lost Parker Braun, which is a huge loss, I think this offensive line is going to be better than we've seen them before.
Well, it should be interesting on Friday night. Definitely a new look and a new era, if you will. I guess we could say that. And we'll get the first sneak peek on Friday. Stan Autry of whiteandgold.com. We'll have it all covered for you. Hey, man, be safe driving through those mountains.
Hey, you know, if it's a spring football game at Georgia Tech on Friday, you can expect rain.
Oh, yeah. It's going to – there'll be a deluge about 6 o'clock.
It's a tradition unlike any other.
Be good, Stan. Thank you.
All right, fellas.
That's Stan Autry. He covers the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets for White and Gold. Running out of time, but we'll definitely talk more golf after the spring game wraps up on Friday night.
We got a major coming up in a couple of weeks. And
do we?
Yeah.
Which one is it?
PGA Championship.
That's not a major.
It is a major.
No.
It's because you don't know anything about golf and call it a non-major. Doesn't make it not true.
If I don't get excited about it, it's not a major. That's my rule. You got the Masters.
So now you're determining
in the open
100 years of golf history. Mm-hmm. You're going to determine what's a major.
How can you call it the PGA Championship? They haven't even played a season.
It's a different. It's not the PGA Tour Championship. It's the PGA. It's Professional Golfers Association of America Championship. That's a different organization.
It's too confusing. It's like boxing.
The PGA Tour is the PGA Tour is the tour, right? And it's the season and schedule. The PGA is like the USGA. They run an organization. You're looking at me like I got three eyeballs.
So who's the WKO champion? Who's the WBO champion? It's all so confusing. Just the Opens and the Masters. Done.
What about the Ryder Cup? Care about the Ryder.
It happens in football season. You want to?
Not anymore. They're moving it up.
Are they?
Yeah. They moved the schedule up.
See, they're listening
they're
to
smart.
Me. Because they're listening to me.
They're not going to not call the PGA a major because you said so.
Monday.
Stan and I overrule. Stan, we outvote you. Stan's going to come on and talk about the PGA.
Well, that's great. I look forward to listening in on the conversation. I get to be part of the audience that day. I look forward to it. It's not a grand slam. It's a triple crown. We're going to take a break. Back with more right after this. .11:48, Russ Brown, Daniel Shirley with you. A story that's come up in college football that a lot of people are talking about is this Brock Hoffman story, the lineman from Coastal Carolina that's transferring to Virginia Tech. His mom has a brain tumor, or had a brain tumor removed in June of 2017. And, you know, this cuts the trip in half for her to be able to go see him. They live in Statesville, North Carolina. It puts him closer to home, so on and so forth. And the NCAA denied its appeal, and, of course, everybody's outraged. But, I mean, it's now we're picking and choosing the outrage, right? I mean, this isn't the first time this has happened. And we said this when the quarterbacks were transferring. Everybody acts like this is a new thing. This isn't a new thing. Now, some high-profile quarterbacks were granted immediate eligibility, Justin Fields and Tate Martell, so it's more in the public eye. But the people that are shocked and outraged by this, good, keep it up. But this isn't a new thing. You know, we've talked about J.D. King on this show, the running back from Oklahoma State, from Fitzgerald, that's transferred back to Georgia Southern. Now, I think there's an appeal process still going on, but he wasn't granted immediate eligibility either. They pick and choose the schools. This kid's going from Coastal Carolina to Virginia Tech. I guarantee you if he was going to Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, Georgia, or a school like that, he'd get immediate eligibility. That's all this is. That's all it's ever been.
Yeah, it's I don't think it's a good thing. I don't know why they have these waivers. Just let these kids transfer.
Just let them play.
Just let them transfer and let them play. I don't get it. I just absolutely don't get it.
And there's some people out there that will say, well, they don't understand why Justin Fields was granted a waiver. I mean, he was granted a waiver because a baseball player referred to him with a racial slur, and there was the idea that he may have wanted to play baseball. Is it then? Yes. Do people agree with that? No. But that's the reason. I can't figure out why Tate Martell was granted immediate eligibility. There's no reason for that. Demetrius Robertson, there's no reason for that. But this kid's mom has a brain tumor. Sorry, kid. Can't play.
And somebody, I did read where somebody had the gall to tell him, oh, she's getting better. Her condition's gotten better since you applied for this transfer. Screw you. Are you kidding me? I'm sorry. I'm driving to wherever that person's office is, and we're going to have a face-to-face.
But
that's just wrong. But, it's just, they should not be waivers. Look, I get that some people say, oh, well, it'll be the Wild West, and we can't just let kids transfer. And well, those same people don't care about coaches leaving at the drop of a hat.
But the Wild West is better than this, where you're just picking and choosing who gets immediate eligibility and who doesn't.
Exactly.
Why can't we just make it – again, I ask this question all the time when it comes to college athletics. What is so wrong with making it the rules the same for everybody? Why is that so hard? The Braves don't play by a different set of the rules than the Reds do.
Nope.
The Falcons don't play by a different set of rules than the Seahawks do. Why is Virginia Tech playing by a different set of rules than Ohio State and Miami?
Right, right. And the kid, the Luke Ford kid who tried to transfer from Georgia to Illinois.
I guarantee you if he was transferring from Illinois to Georgia, he would be eligible. I guarantee you.
And somebody tweeted out, just say, hey, I'm transferring because of playing time. Apparently that gets you the waiver. But your mom having a brain surgery doesn't. It's just, again, yes, you want to talk about Wild West or whatever you want to call it, have one set of rules for everybody. If a kid wants to transfer, let them transfer. You talk about them being student athletes. If a regular student wants to transfer, they can transfer. Oh, well, it's different with sports. Well, they're student athletes, NCAA. And this young man is not transferring because he doesn't like living on the beach. He's transferring because there's something wrong with his mother.
Right.
And you're that heartless? I would guarantee you this gets overturned.
I hope so.
And he gets the transfer.
I mean, either this gets overturned or the ones where guys have been granted immediate eligibility get overturned.
Can't play. Right.
I mean, it's got to be the same. And that's why I said the real solution here is to eliminate waivers.
That's right.
Because once you bring the waiver process in, I mean, they're literally picking and choosing. Picking and choosing, picking and choosing, picking and choosing. There's no rhyme or reason to it. There's no standard. You cannot tell me that there is. It's like the playoff committee. Every time they put out a new top 25 ranking and some bozo gets on TV and tries to explain to you why they made the decision, there's no criteria to why they made the decision. They're just going to take the decision they made and then try to make it relevant. That's exactly what's happening in this waiver process. There's no reason Tate Martell should be eligible and this kid from Coastal Carolina shouldn't be eligible. There's no reason. When you put those two things next to each other, in fact, if you're going to do that, if you put them next to each other, Brock Hoffman should be eligible. Tate Martell should not. But I think the real solution is none of them, none, zero, zilch, nada, should be eligible. Zero, none. If you have your degree and you transfer, you can play. If you don't have your degree and you transfer, you sit out, regardless. Because here's the other thing, too. Here's the other thing we have to think about. And this is the thing that this is the part where you just throw some reality at people and you come off sounding like a jerk. But it's true. Brock Hoffman's ability to take care of his mother does not hinge on whether or not he can play football.
That's true.
So if you transfer to Blacksburg to be closer, if you're not playing on Saturday, you can still go take care of your loved one.
Well, you could transfer to Blacksburg as just a common student, and there would be no issues.
Right.
Right. Yeah. That, I mean, that's what you're saying. I get that, but I mean, NCAA's got to be better than this, man. They gotta just get rid of the damn waivers. Let kids transfer. Look, let's say that they stick in, that he's stuck at, is it College of Charleston or Charleston Southern?
Coastal Carolina.
Coastal Carolina. God, I'm all over the place. It's three of them.
Unless you're in the right state.
There's three of them down there, and I always get them mixed up. But the coaches there, do you think they're saying, hey, we're going to keep him? He's going to be miserable at that school.
No. I don't think that. No.
But what I'm saying is they don't want him on the, they're not going to, even if it wasn't something about the mother. If a kid wants to transfer, the coaches are not going to want them in the room.
No.
Because they
don't want to be there.
It's not positive.
Right. Exactly. It's not. It's not positive. You don't want to hang on to people that don't want to be there.
Right.
Because, I don't necessarily, I wouldn't say that Brock Hoffman doesn't want to be there. It's just there's something else pulling him away. But again.
Right. This is a different situation.
The solution is to get rid of the waivers. And when people say, well, I need to transfer for because, to be closer to a family member because they're sick, your ability to be closer to that family member to care for them doesn't hinge on whether or not you can play football. In fact, since you're not doing anything on Saturday, you can go be with the family member. So just get rid of the waivers. We got to take a break for the top of the hour. Braves talk on the way, that and more as we continue right after this.
It's time to have lunch and talk sports. It's the Midday Sports Zone on Middle Georgia's ESPN.
Our number dose, Midday Sports Zone, Russ Brown, Daniel Shirley with you. I got to talk about this Braves game from last night. Been avoiding it for an hour. This is the worst bullpen. Is this the worst bullpen in the history of baseball?
Well, David O'Brien said the other day it's not the worst bullpen in the NL East.
This is true.
So
last night, Kevin Gausman, however you want to say it, was taken out of the game in the sixth inning. All right. Jesse Biddle comes into the game and promptly walks three batters. Doesn't record an out. Wes Parsons comes in, he walks a batter, gets them out of the sixth, or the seventh, or whatever inning it was. The sixth. Winkler pitches the seventh, he walked a batter. Sobotka pitches the eighth, he walked a batter. Braves relievers last night, in 2 2/3 innings, walked seven batters. One of them was intentional, but that's six walks in 2 2/3.
The other six weren't.
That's awful. And I saw this tweet today from Eric O'Flaherty, and what it tells me is, somebody in that clubhouse, a coach, a player, I don't know, somebody needs to go to that bullpen and challenge them. So somebody tweeted at Eric O'Flaherty, and again, I've quoted this Twitter handle a lot. Eric O'Flaherty, a former Braves reliever, it's a great Twitter follow.
Oh, my God, yeah, he is awesome.
And his Twitter handle, if you don't follow him, is at EOF34. But somebody tweeted at him last night and asked if it was that hard to throw strikes. He said, not if you're willing to go down in flames. At some point, you just aim right down the middle and see what happens. Either your stuff is good enough to pitch in the league or it isn't. Walks are usually a result of a pitcher subconsciously not wanting to answer that question. That is a really polite way of saying they're soft.
They're scared or they don't have confidence in their stuff. I mean, that to me, that's...
Isn't that the same thing?
Yes. I mean, you see guys nibble... There's nothing more frustrating than to watch a pitcher nibble and be scared of his stuff and be scared that he doesn't have good enough stuff. I'm sorry. Throw it in the strike zone, and if they hit it, well, hell, they hit it. And then you get sent down. You're going to get sent down either way.
Right. Exactly. That's all this comes down to. Freddie Freeman said in the post game that they have good stuff, and you just got to run them back out there and hope they get it figured out. Maybe Freeman's the one that needs to go down to the bullpen and tell them, you've got good stuff, throw it. Stop pitching scared.
Stop nibbling and pitching scared. That's right. That's all it is. It's a confidence thing. And look, if you don't have the confidence, and I'm sorry, if you don't have the stuff, then you're going to go anyway. You might as well throw strikes and challenge a hitter as opposed to nibbling and being scared and walking people.
Give yourself a chance, right?
Yep.
Because walking people, you're not giving yourself a chance. And it was an incredibly frustrating loss last night. We've seen a lot of this. Sonny Gray was so good in the early innings, and the Braves finally got to him in the sixth. They put three on the board to take a 4-3 lead. And what happens? The bullpen
comes right back.
Gausman was a part of this too. Most of the runs got charged to him, but the bullpen comes in, can't put the fire out, and Cincinnati puts four on the board and goes right back into the lead. Now the Braves did have some chances late in the game to win the game. Ozzie tried to drop down a bunt, couldn't get it down. It's like watching NBA players that can't shoot free throws. I don't understand why Major League Baseball players don't know how to bunt, but that's neither here nor there.
And that's become an epidemic, watching guys try to bunt.
Well, and then you've got people in the sport
at the ball, and yeah.
Yeah, and then you've got people in the sport that say, what's the purpose of bunting anyway? Well, last night when you're down 7-6 and Matt Joyce leads the game off, Iglesias comes in the game, right? This closer for Cincinnati. Rossiel Iglesias, Araziel, I don't know how they say the first name, but that's his name. All right, you know what he had done in his last three games, appearances before last night, Daniel? He had faced, in three appearances, he had faced nine batters and struck out nine batters.
Wow.
This dude comes into the game, first pitch, Joyce doubles. If Ozzie gets the bunt down, Joyce is on third with one out, and you tie the game, and you get a run off a guy that had just retired nine straight on nine strikeouts in three games. That's why you got to know how to bunt. Because I guarantee you, in the sixth or seventh game of the World Series in that scenario,
it's going to come up.
Ozzie Albies doesn't get that bunt down. That's all we're talking about on the show today.
Yeah. Yeah.
It matters.
It does matter. It really, really does matter. And it's not even just pitchers now. I mean, you see pitchers who can't bunt. How is that possible? You don't have to swing the bat most of the time for a real at bat. A lot of times you're coming up with somebody on base and they want you to bunt them over, and you can't do that? It's atrocious. It is absolutely atrocious. You're right. It's like watching guys not be able to shoot free throws. They're called free throws for a reason.
Yeah, it drives me nuts. And Ozzie couldn't get the bunt down, and the Braves couldn't get him in. And as Freddie said post-game, they had the right guys up in the ninth. They just didn't come through. But I'm not going to sit here and worry about the offense not coming through in that situation on a given night on a random Tuesday in Cincinnati in April, because the bigger picture here is the bullpen.
That's going to happen. You're going to have guys come through and not come through. I mean, that's the daily grind of baseball. But we've been talking about this bullpen. I'm sure y'all talked about it last year before I came back on the show.
Absolutely,
we've been talking about it since I came back on the show in July last year.
They're awful.
And they haven't done anything to improve it.
No.
Nothing.
So here we are. I mean, it's not a surprise. It's just incredibly frustrating to see your team dropping games like this. Seriously, on a night where for five innings, Sonny Gray was untouchable.
Right. He was really good.
I don't know what happened to him. I'm sure the stat people would say third time through the order. And that is, you can't argue with it last night. I mean, the third time through the order, and then all of a sudden, the guy that, hadn't given up anything and it struck out nine batters, all of a sudden, the Braves, put three on the board the third time through the order. But you gave yourself a chance to win a game you really didn't feel like you had any business winning because of how well the starting pitcher was for five innings, or how well he performed for five innings. And you can't because of the bullpen. And this won't be the last time. And you know what I'm starting to think? Because Saturday night, after that first game and the first two innings in Cleveland, when the Braves have dropped their fourth in a row, and then Cleveland goes up 7-0 in the second inning, I kind of start to throw my hands up. And I really do believe you can lose the division in April. And I thought that's what we were watching, right? They come back and they win the baseball game. And then Sunday night, they just pounded.
Right.
Absolutely pounded Cleveland. So they come back in this series against Cincinnati after a day off, and they lose a game like this. Now they're 11-11. You know what I'm starting to think we're looking at here? I think we're looking at an 81-81 season until this bullpen gets fixed.
If the bullpen doesn't get fixed, that's probably right, because you can have all the offense you want in the world, but if you can't stop anybody that stuff will catch up to you. Because there are going to be nights like last night where the offense doesn't come through right. in a key spot, even though they did score a lot of runs. It's just baseball. There are going to be nights where your offense in a key spot doesn't come through. You got to be able to stop somebody.
Well, and I think it's time to start having a discussion about the general manager. I really do, because based off of what you just said, the teams he built in Toronto could hit with the best of any team in baseball, but they never won anything
because they couldn't pitch.
They had pitching issues. And this guy goes out and spends $23 million on Josh Donaldson. He was 1-for-5 last night with 3 strikeouts. He did drive in a run. He did score a run. So, I mean, that's people look at productions in a lot of ways. Josh Donaldson accounted for two of the Braves' 6 runs. That's a productive night in my
book. It's about runs. Right.
So he's getting that done. He's doing what he was brought here to do, especially after that 2-home-run performance on Sunday night. But it's not helping the ball club win baseball games. Okay, that's the problem here. The bullpen is the issue. They can't get people out after the starter comes out of the game. And if you look at Alex Anthopoulos' teams in Toronto, same thing. I mean, he makes the trade for Troy Tulowitzki. And, I mean, you had Donaldson was in that lineup. Tulowitzki was in that lineup. Bautista was in that lineup. Encarnacion was in that lineup. I think Jose Reyes might have been on that team at the top of this whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it was an incredible lineup, but they didn't win.
Didn't win anything.
They couldn't pitch.
Yeah. They won a little bit. They made it to the playoffs, but yeah.
And I think that's what we're dealing with. I think we're dealing with a general manager, and I can't remember the last time this happened in Braves history. You'd have to go back to before Bobby Cox was brought back in '86, probably, if at all, where the general manager looks like he values offense more than pitching, and you're not going to win that way. You're just not.
Yeah,
I'm telling you right now.
I think about those teams when I was growing up. I mean, they just were bad.
I mean, it's hard to really put a finger on what the philosophy was, right?
But, yeah, since Bobby Cox kind of came there and straightened them out,
yeah,
they have valued pitching. And right now they don't seem to value – or at least they haven't done anything to fix their biggest issue.
Or at least they don't value relief pitching.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't tell me that they do. They didn't spend a dime on it. And it was the biggest issue with the ball club last year, and it's a critical issue with the ball club this year. Critical. Why are you giggling?
I'll tell you in a second.
No, that's no fun.
I can't tell you on the air.
Anyway, so the Braves and the Reds, game two tonight, and I don't know what to expect with this club. And I think we're just going to have to take each game one at a time. Mike Soroka on the mound for Atlanta, Tanner Roark on the mound for Cincinnati. And I think the Braves showed us in Cleveland, never count them out. I think the Braves also showed us in SunTrust Park against Arizona. They could lose to anybody. They could lose a series to anybody in a given week.
Yep.
And obviously if they don't win tonight, they lose the series to Cincinnati.
I think, you know, as much as we talked about the NL East being so tough, I think all these teams are really flawed.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to figure out how to fix their flaws. Well, I mean, or maybe they're trying to live with their flaws. It seems like the Braves are just trying to live with their flaws as opposed to fixing them.
Well, they didn't do anything to fix it in the offseason.
Right. Is it too late now? Well, yeah. Well, it's not too late now, but
you got to stay in the hunt.
It's too late to do anything until, what, late May? Because that's when teams will start being able to say, hey, we suck. We better trade some pieces.
We're a month away from Memorial Day.
Yep.
And I think that's kind of what you look for. And then you – I mean, it's still I think we'll see some trades in June. I think we will. And I don't know who's going to fire first. But right now in the standings, Philly's a game back in New York. The Braves and the Nationals are a game and a half back. And everybody needs relief help, right? So yeah. I think it's going to come early. But it's still about a month away.
I just got this note from Jeff Schultz. He said the Braves have 8 guys with a 1,000 – plus OPS, and 6 guys batting .300 or better, and they're 11.
They're an 11-11 team. I mean, there you go. I mean, that's a great stat.
All
I mean,
about the bullpen.
There it is. I mean, there it is. You just I don't get it. I mean, I you know, and it's hard for if you're a diehard Braves fan, it's hard for you to watch this philosophy, this offensive mindset. When you watch the 95 World Series.
Yeah.
And that pitching staff shut down, my gosh, Eddie Murray was on that team.
David Justice, Albert Bell, right?
Albert Bell was no. David Justice was a Brave.
I mean, I'm sorry. Not David Justice. David Justice hit the home run for the Braves. Yeah. I'm sorry. Albert Bell.
Albert Bell. Jim Thome was on that team. Manny Ramirez was on that team.
Who was the shortstop?
I think it was Omar Vizquel.
Wasn't Alomar on those teams?
Oh, Alomar was on those teams. Yeah, Robbie Alomar.
He played second base.
I think he was the second baseman. Yeah. I mean, and the Braves pitching staff just shut him down, and the Braves won the World Series. So, you know, I'm always going to believe in that.
Yep.
That's and what brought a championship.
What, they scored one run?
Yeah, beat them 1-0.
David Justice hit the home run, and that was it.
And Tom Glavine said, I just need one. David Justice said, there you go. And that's all he needed, and the rest is history.
You got to address the bullpen, man.
You've got to.
And look, the thing about it is, they did, like we said, they didn't address it in the offseason. They knew it was going to be an issue, and here they are, and it's been an issue the first 22 games of the season. And it's not even that they didn't go throw money at it. They haven't even committed to saying, okay, Tukey, you're a bullpen guy. Bryce Wilson, you're a bullpen guy. Kyle Wright, you're a bullpen guy. At least that would be an improvement, right? At least then you're saying we're doing something. Yeah. Right now they're not doing anything except throwing Jesse Biddle back out there every night. And
walking
people
want to
kill themselves when they see him coming out of the bullpen.
Yep. And once again, I mean, Kimbrel would help because it pushes everybody down. But I don't think that's enough.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think one player is enough. It's deeper than that. Last night's game is a perfect example.
Kimbrel does not do anything to last night to keep from Jesse Biddle from being on the mound.
Right. And because you've got guys coming out in the fifth inning. So you got to get somebody's got to get you out of the fifth, then you got the sixth, seventh, and eighth. Okay, that's three or four pitchers before you can even get to Kimbrel. And I'm not saying he wouldn't help. I mean, there's no doubt he would, but it's so much deeper than that. Oh my God, we got to take a break.
Yep.
I can't talk about this anymore. Braves Reds tonight. Pregame show will start at 5:25 here on the Superstations. First pitch at 6:40. Back with more right after this. /12:19, Russ and Daniel with you. Midday Sports Zone. The breaking news in baseball, Gio Gonzalez has signed with the Milwaukee Brewers. He basically had that, I guess, an opt-out deal, for lack of a better term, with the Yankees, where if he wasn't on the Major League roster, he could get out of it. He did that.
Yep.
And the Milwaukee Brewers have signed Gio Gonzalez. Photoshop's very interesting. There's already a picture of Gio pitching, mid-pitch, in a Brewers uniform. I don't know how they do that.
That's crazy.
I mean, if somebody transported themselves from 20 years ago, they'd be like, well, when did he last pitch with the Brewers? There's a picture right there. What are you talking about? There's a picture. Like, no, it's fake.
It's not real.
Don't believe the hype. George Dick. So, last night after the Braves game, I was listening to the post game with Ben Ingram. And after the game, we had the Trailblazers Thunder game on here. And I've talked about how I really haven't watched a second in the NBA playoffs. Well, that's settled in. And there was about 3 minutes to go in the first half, so I listened to the second half. And my goodness, Damian Lillard, hello, how are you? 50 points, and just ho-hum, pulling up from 40 feet to win the game in the series. The second buzzer beater he's made in his career to end a series.
Dame, crazy. Crazy. And did you see him waving it? I like the salt. I like a little petty with my NBA playoffs. Well, I like it.
Well, I'll say this, and what Daniel's referencing is when Lillard hit the shot, he waved bye to the Oklahoma City Thunder I don't know how else to say it. He just told them bye. But he was asked about that in the post game, and he said, you know, after Oklahoma City won their first game in the series, there was a lot of talking going on.
Yeah, there was some talking. I wasn't saying he was starting to talk.
Right.
He ended it.
Well, what he did was he kept his mouth shut and just kept plugging away. And what they did was keep their mouth shut and just keep plugging away and playing and got the last laugh.
Yep. I like it. I mean,
have a problem with that.
I'm all for some petty with my NBA playoffs. I think it makes it more interesting. Guys are too huggy-feely, friendly, all that crap in the playoffs. I'm sorry. You got to take somebody out. And there was a lot of talk coming from that other team about the shutting down Dame, and Lillard hadn't done this and he hadn't done that. And you're right. He kept his mouth shut and kept playing and hit that shot last night. And I loved it. I love everything about it. He's such a great player. He might be the second best shooter in the league. behind Steph. So it was an amazing shot. It was an amazing moment. And it was one of those moments where Twitter just went berserk last night. People were blowing up. I mean, everybody's like, oh, my God, what did Dame just do? And I mean, there was that, and then apparently there was a crazy hockey game going on at the same time. That's all I saw on Twitter last night for about 20 minutes.
Yeah, San Jose knocked the Knights out of the NHL playoffs, my Knights.
So it was a great win for Portland. I can't wait to the next round of the playoffs are going to be great.
I hope so. The other three games last night were total duds. The Raptors ended their series with the Magic. They won 115-96. Philly polished off Brooklyn 122-100.
And that game was like 25-3 at one point. It was good over Lord. From the start.
Oh, that's awful. And then the Nuggets beat the Spurs 108-90 to take a 3-2 lead in that series. So coming up tonight in the NBA playoffs, you got Jazz Rockets at 8 o'clock and then Clippers Warriors at 10:30 with the Rockets and the Warriors trying to finish that one off in advance to the next round. And we have a game 6 on Thursday, Nuggets Spurs. And hopefully that turns into a game 7. Hopefully.
Hopefully. Or let's just get on to the next round.
Or let's – well, that may be the other way to look at it. Let's just get on to the next
but
round.
But that series has been pretty good. So, at least competitive overall. So, but Portland will play the winner of that series, Denver-San Antonio. The semifinals in the Eastern Conference are set. Milwaukee, Boston, Toronto, Philadelphia. So the top four teams in the East all advance to the semifinals. And it's probably going to be the top four teams in the West, too, it looks.
I hate to be that guy, but I'm going to be that guy. Really need Philadelphia to win that series against Toronto.
Really?
I just think that's more interesting. Now, I know that Toronto has Kawhi Leonard, but, I mean, seriously, Philly-Boston in the Eastern Conference Finals would be cool. You have to admit.
Oh, that's all-time great now.
I mean, that's
what I grew up watching was Philly-Boston in the Eastern Conference Finals almost every year.
Right. I mean, look, Milwaukee's a good team. They got possibly the best player in the league that nobody talks about. And Toronto's good. I mean, I'm not saying Toronto-Milwaukee wouldn't be interesting, but, I mean, there's just – when you – Philly-Boston, just say it out loud, right? And then in the West, as you said, Portland has advanced. They'll get the winner of the Spurs and the Nuggets. I just want somebody to give the Warriors a series. Exactly. And I want the Warriors to not cry when they lose a game. If I can get those two things, I'll be okay. Nobody likes a whiny champion. And they're kind of a whiny champion.
They are a whiny champion. They've turned into a pretty unlikable bunch.
They really have.
And I don't know that it's all of them, but it's like I still like Steph. I still like Clay. But, and you know, Iguodala and those kind of guys. It's hard not to like those guys. But KD and Draymond, and I mean, they've got some guys on their team that you're not going to be big fans of.
Mm-mm. And Steve Kerr is just so outspoken as a head coach. It's like the celebrities when they get on their soapbox. I just want to watch basketball. I mean, and maybe other people are into that stuff. I don't care. I just want to watch basketball. If I want tabloid politics, I'll turn on cable news. I don't want that. I don't care. It's a waste of time. It's children throwing sand at each other in the sandbox on the playground. It's, you know, he said this, she said that. My dad can beat up your dad. I'm a grown up. I don't care. I just want basketball. That's it. I just want basketball. And last night, boy, we got it. Damian Lillard, my goodness.
It was a great shot, man.
Oh,
did you see the photo of them all laying on the floor?
Yeah.
And he's like staring right into it. It's a great photo. Whoever took that photo is like, damn.
Yeah.
That's a great photo.
They got it. And they, you know, it's these West Coast teams, you know. Damian Lillard's a good player. But you don't know a lot about him because he plays in Portland on the West Coast. They don't talk about him a lot.
Well, and he went to Weber State, too, so he's not a big school guy.
Right. And then you've got – who's the guy for the Nuggets that's so awesome?
Jamal Murray?
No. Hang on.
Oh, the big guy for the
– yeah, he's probably one of the best players in the league. I would say the best player in the league nobody knows about, Nikola Jokic.
Jokic, yeah.
But nobody knows who these guys are, so hopefully they can make their way into the playoffs and we get to learn a little bit more about them. As we move along here, and I just want it to be interesting.
I do too. And the thing about Denver that people around here will remember this name, Torrey Craig. who played at USC Upstate against those Mercer teams. That when Mercer was having the best run in the history of the program, Torrey Craig was on those USC Upstate teams and almost knocked them out of the playoffs a couple of times, or the tournament, the A-Sun tournament. So he plays for Denver and is a really good player too. So, yeah, again, we want to see somebody give Golden State a challenge.
That's it.
Yeah.
Just a challenge. Just that's all we want is a challenge. And I'm like, this is what you always talk about, what a conundrum I am. So as bad as I want to see Philly-Boston, I'm rooting for Milwaukee Golden State in the finals. Is there a way I can get Philly-Boston in the Eastern Conference Finals, but then Milwaukee steps in for the finals?
Milwaukee in the finals?
I've watched too much wrestling, don't I?
It would be Milwaukee. You know, Milwaukee's got number one seed.
Mm-hmm.
So Golden State would have to beat them without the home court advantage. That would be interesting to see if they could do that.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to guard him?
Who, Giannis? Durant?
Durant, Draymond, maybe. I mean, tag team him, I guess.
Well, I guess Draymond will probably just kick him below the belt and try to injure him.
Kick him in the jump.
I mean, you can say a lot about my Pistons. They weren't dirty like that. Like that. They didn't go below the belt. Come on.
No, they went at the head every time, around the neck.
Well, that's all right. Below the belt, that's...
Below the belt should be off limits.
If you go below the belt on somebody, I think less of you as a human being.
Yes. I mean, that's an unwritten rule among dudes.
Right.
Nothing in the junk.
No.
That's right.
Yeah. Draymond Green is not... Mm-mm. We got to take a break. Back. Well, he slipped, right?
Yes.
I just kick when I land. Oh, yeah. Oops. Back with more right after this. Well, 1232, Russ and Daniel back with you, Midday Sports Zone. So, two UGA recruiting staffers one's been fired and one's been suspended. We don't know the details of this. And I hope I'm saying the first name correct here. Dacia?
I think it's Dacia. Yeah, Dacia, something like that. Dacia.
Dacia King, D-A-C-I-A.
Yep.
Who was listed has been fired, and then you have Luckman Abdullah. He's the director of on-campus recruiting. He's been placed on a 30-day suspension without pay. Greg McGarity says that he, quote, "I'm not talking about personnel stuff, regardless of what the position is. I just don't comment on personnel decisions or matters. Sorry. I don't know why I turned into a Yankee there for a second. But anyway, So, I mean, he's not going to tell us why, so all he can do is speculate, right? I've heard two things, and neither of them may be true. I've heard that there was a directive issued from not the athletic department, but from the university, and it was ignored. And then I've also heard maybe there was something going on that shouldn't have been going on. Who knows? In terms of a relationship, we'll say it that way. I'm trying to keep it clean here.
Because we don't know. Yeah, we don't know all the... You got to be careful when you don't know all the facts.
Right. So, but that's the thing. If they're not going to comment on it, and nobody's really reported on it outside of this thing happened and there's no comment from the school, then all we can do is talk about rumors.
Well, and there will be FOI requests.
Yeah. And in 3 years, we'll know what happened.
It sounds like they're going to be answered a lot quicker than that 90-day rule. Or whatever. Yeah. So we'll see.
But, I mean, as far as, you know, the recruiting program coordinator and then you've got the director of on-campus recruiting, if these are the two that are out, it's not like they were in an office by themselves, you know. So somebody else will step in and fill those shoes. Will they fill it as well? I don't know. How does this affect the Georgia football program? I don't know. But, you know, it's just I hope that it is – not I hope it's ignoring a directive, because we already had the weirdo with the shower cams, right? We don't need any more weird stuff going
on. That one was somebody deserved to get their behind beat for that, for sure. That was over the top. But yeah, we don't know. Well, hopefully we'll find something out soon.
Yeah. I would like to know. So we'll see. And it's just vague, and there's nothing out there, and Greg McGarity's not saying anything about it. So here we are. here we are. And I don't, you know, we had the story about the Florida staffer yesterday that was beating up his girlfriend.
Yep.
Now, that's the thing. You start putting 25, 30 people around your football program. Stuff like this is going to happen.
Well, we hear it all the time. Coaches say, how can I control 115 kids or whatever on a college football team? Well, it's, you know, when you got 30 people on your staff, it's hard to know what all them are doing and keep them in line, unless other than hiring the right kind of people. We all make mistakes in our lives. I get that.
Yeah.
But,
well, I think it's safe to say there's some character flaws within the Georgia football program.
Oh, there's no doubt about that.
I mean, I thought we were past this, but I mean, it's been staffers and it's been players. There's some character issues going on.
What was the old running joke? Mark Richt has lost control. I guess Mark Richt has lost control of the recruiting department.
Mark Richt lost control again.
I mean, you can't blame Mark Richt. I mean, we thought it was all Mark Richt. That's what we heard.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this stuff continues without Mark Richt there. So what's the constant?
Athens.
It's that program.
Yeah. There's something else going on.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the thing. If you can't blame Mark Richt for it, you can't blame Kirby Smart for it either, right? It's two different guys in the same problem.
Or you could blame both of them if you want to.
Maybe you blame both of them, right.
If you want to be a grown-up, you blame both of them. And that's the way it should be.
Well, the Georgia Bulldogs are currently tied for second in the Fulmer Cup standings with Nebraska.
Oh, God. Here we go.
New Hampshire has got a huge lead. I don't know what happened in New Hampshire, but they've got 20 points, and Georgia and Nebraska have 12.
They should get a trophy. they should get a trophy for winning that cup.
I don't think. Who's going to accept it? Hey, we got a package. What's this? Oh, the Fulmer Cup.
I would walk it right up to the president's office and say, here's what kind of program you got running on your campus.
Mm.
Straighten it out. Figure it out. Get it fixed. Georgia's been like perennial contenders for the Fulmer Cup.
No, it kind of died down there for a little while.
I mean, the last 20 years it has been.
Well, I think, you know, the tail end of Mark Richt's tenure when he started kicking people out of school, it changed. And then when Kirby came aboard, there were really no issues. And then
people were waiting in the wings, waiting in the weeds for it.
And then here it is.
And then pop, we're back,
boom,
baby.
Here it is. I mean, hopefully this is just a one-off,
this
right?
This has got to be a one-off. I hope so.
Just,
I mean, you did just have a staffer spying on people last year in the bathroom.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
That is still one of the weirdest stories.
That's not even just that's a jailable offense.
Right. That's criminal.
That is criminal.
You're creepy and a lot of other.
And you're going to be very popular in the prison when you do that kind of stuff. They don't like people in the prison. It's weird there's a code in prison.
There really is.
It's, you don't, if you're a child molester or if you're a rapist or a stalker or somebody, you get sent to a special circle in hell. And in prison, they take care of it for some. I don't know why they have a code in prison, but they do.
Mm-hmm.
I watch enough cop shows to know that. Chicago PD and all those shows. They teach me that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you learned. I'm glad you could provide.
I'm not ever going to learn from experience. I promise you that. I'm never going to prison.
And it's like this year, and you know, this is the thing where you just kind of hold your breath through the summer, and then you just get to the season, and it all starts to go away. But I think, for the most part, we've avoided talking about this stuff because it was a bunch of little stuff. But now all that little stuff's starting to add up.
It's adding up. And what do we say about those teams that have all this crap going on during the offseason? And you can't blame the players for this.
No.
But when you've got and Seth Emerson wrote the line in his story that day a couple weeks ago, they'd had seven spring practices and five arrests. Those teams do not win championships because they don't have any leadership. And I'm not picking on Georgia. It happens to everybody.
Well, no, I mean, Kirby Smart said as much himself.
That's right.
I mean, and you could tell that's why it's bothering him, and you know, because of his competitive nature more than anything else, that's why it's bothering
him.
He's
sick of it.
Because he knows this.
That's right.
And he's there to win. Look, if Kirby Smart ends his tenure as the University of Georgia without a national championship, you can't call it anything but a failure.
That's right.
The guy before him in his last season, that team won 10 games.
He was brought in to win a championship.
Period. And he knows what it takes, and he's not getting it out of this year's group. And there's still time, and there's time to turn it around, but it's just not, this is not good. Nothing's gone right since the bowl game.
Nothing's gone right since the loss to Alabama.
Yeah, but I mean, it was a close game. It was a competitive game. They're one of the best teams in the country. You win some, you lose some.
And then all they did
they had no business losing to Texas.
But all they did was bitch and moan about not being in the playoff. And that's when it
true.
Started.
Yeah, you're right about that. You're right about that.
All this stuff started that next week. We need to be in the playoff. We should be in the playoff. How about you focus on Texas?
Yeah, you're right. No, you're right. That you're right. That is when it started, but if we get an update on what these staffers did, we'll pass it along.
Hopefully we'll know, because those requests are being filed.
Yeah.
I know personally that they've been being filed.
I'm sure that's not the only one. And in 90 days, we'll find out. But don't you get this out there now? You don't want to wait till...
Get it out and get it over.
Because it's going to be... Because if you go with your 90 days that the legislature, you know, you can't get funding for the agriculture that was wiped out by the hurricane, but we can get a Freedom of Information Act turned to 3 months. The thing is, when you got to weigh against that, is you could wait the 3 months... Hoping that, quote, it'll go away, but actually, wouldn't it be better to put that out there now?
Right.
Than August?
Get it done. Because here's what's going to happen. If you get it done now, the story comes out, everybody moves on. Right? They go on vacation, summer's coming up, nobody's going
to
care.
Everybody's looking forward to the season.
Right.
Yeah.
If you do the 90-day thing, everybody, it's going to go away now for a few months, and then boom, 90 days, it's a big-ass story again.
Yep. We'll see how that all plays out. And unfortunately, it's the time of year where you can't talk about anything good that's happened on the field, because nothing's happening on the field.
Right.
So we'll take a break. Back with more right after this. That's 12:47. You trying to call me a hillbilly? Oh, man.
With your mountain whiskey.
12:47. Russ and Daniel back with you. Midday Sports Zone. No, we were just talking. We talk about this. If anything newsworthy breaks, we'll jump in. I promise. It's just how different people can be. We were talking about it during the break, because I grew up in Millersville, which, I mean, people are familiar with, right? And my wife grew up, she technically didn't grow up in Charlotte, but I mean, it's, you know how Atlanta is like Marietta and it, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So the difference in us, like Daniel was, you were talking about driving through the country and you haven't seen a house for, or anything for like 20 miles. And then all of a sudden there's a house and I'm like, yeah, I want to live in that house.
Not me.
And my wife's not having it either.
I don't like, I didn't, when I lived at the... You know, we live, you know where we live. We live near Bass Road, right near the exit, 172.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked at the Telegraph downtown, in downtown, before we moved over to Mercer Village. I didn't like driving that far to work.
Don't ever move to a city.
And it's like 10 minutes on the interstate, right?
Don't ever move to a city.
Oh, I would kill. I mean, seriously, if I had to move to Atlanta.
Take that drive that you just described and make it an hour.
Well, I was driving back and forth to Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And then I was spending the night, and I was driving from my sister's house to Atlanta, or my sister's house from Marietta to the Cox offices, and it was 14 miles. And there were many times where it took me an hour and 15 minutes to go 14 miles. Russ, I would kill myself, or I would kill somebody else. If I had to live in that traffic all the time,
mm-hmm.
where you can't plan,
mm-mm.
you don't know if it's going to, if, hey, I'm going to leave my house to go to the dentist, and I got to be there in 30 minutes. Should I leave 2 hours before, or should I wait?
Well, it's interesting to me, because I guess it's different perspectives. Like, there's no way you'd want to live out in the wilderness like that.
No.
And my wife's the same way, and I get it. I get it. I mean, it's not like an argument we have. Like, I totally understand it, because that is very different from a lifestyle that most people are accustomed to. On the flip side, though, the last time me and her were in Atlanta. We went up for a Hawks game, right? And we drove into the CNN Center because we were staying at the hotel
right,
there.
Right.
So it took us from the time we left our house. Like, and here's the deal. If I leave my house and drive to Atlanta and I did it at, you know, 3 a.m. or there was no traffic, I can get from my house to downtown Atlanta in 1 hour and 15 minutes.
Right.
And I'm not speeding either.
No, right, right.
But
right.
It usually takes longer, obviously, because of traffic. Well, this particular day, it took us 3 hours. And we were in the city of Atlanta for about an hour of that.
Of that, right.
They were doing road work on the interstate before 212, where it backs up around Tanger and yeah. McDonough and all right. that. And then you still had that back up too. So that's what took so long. But anyway, so we get in there and like literally, like the lights are changing, people are blocking the intersection. Like the grid's just it can't handle the amount of traffic that's there. And people always talk about the hustle and bustle of the city and the fast-paced life. And I'm looking at her, and I said, why do people talk about fast-paced city life? There's nothing fast-paced about this life. If I had a bunch of errands to run, that's all I could do. I mean, what I can get done and making in 2 hours and then go do yard work and then still have the afternoon to sit back and relax would take a whole day in a city.
I would love to live in Charlotte. I've always wanted to live in Charlotte. I think I would like to live in a big city where, like Laura's sister lives outside of Philadelphia. I would like to live like that because you could ride the train into downtown mm-hmm. if you want to.
Yeah.
If I had that, like if we had a train to Atlanta, hey,
oh, I'm in. Yeah.
But I don't want. Yeah, you're the two extremes are living out in the middle of nowhere. I don't want that. Or living it to me, Atlanta is the extreme. I don't want to live in that traffic. I mean, I've been in downtown Chicago. I haven't driven around in Chicago.
But you don't have to.
You don't have to. You take a cab everywhere.
Or you can take a train.
Or take a train, right. Or you can walk a lot of places. Atlanta really, it's still spread out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's. I heard somebody say L.A. is 100 suburbs trying to become one city. You know, that's what L.A. is. It's not. There's not really a downtown L.A.
Right.
There is a downtown Atlanta, but you're still... I mean, if you wanted to walk from somewhere to get to Phillips Arena, you're not really going to do... I mean, or State Farm Arena now, you're not really going to want to do that.
Mm-mm. I mean, we did, but we were also staying at the hotel in the CNN right. Center. Like, we didn't... Well, I mean, we didn't even have to go outside.
Right.
I mean, you just take the elevator down, you're in the CNN Center, and you walk to the entrance and go in.
But it's... That traffic in Atlanta, man.
It's crazy.
There's... Again, I've been in New York, so I don't know what it's like driving in New York.
But see, in New York, you can take a subway anywhere you need to go.
Right.
Like, you look at Atlanta and MARTA, and it's just one giant cross, and there's a couple of spurs. It doesn't really go anywhere.
Right.
In New York, I mean, you get a subway map, and it's...
Oh,
I mean, you can take that train anywhere you want to go.
Well, and remember we had Vic on from L.A., from the mm-hmm. Athletic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he was talking about traffic in Atlanta, and he said, people think this is traffic. I've seen...
Well, yeah, I mean,
L.A.'s a crazy... It's yeah. crazy.
I couldn't live somewhere like that. I got a friend I went to school with. She lives out in Los Angeles, and it's nuts. She doesn't go anywhere unless she just has to, or it's a planned trip. As long as, outside of her suburb, as right, you like to say, 100 right. suburbs trying to be a city.
Like, I wouldn't mind living in Marietta, maybe, or Roswell. Jeff Schultz lives in Roswell, and he loves it. But you're kind of in Atlanta, but you're not.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, even my brother-in-law, he's a pilot for Delta, and he has to check traffic constantly to see, hey, what time do I need to leave
mm-hmm.
to get down to the airport to fly a plane.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like he can just say, hey, my plane is, I got to be there 3 hours before. It's 4 hours before, but I've got, it's a 20-minute drive from their house to the airport.
Yeah.
But it can be 5 hours. I mean, if the traffic is bad enough.
Well, Charlotte traffic's not that bad, but when I interned at Raycom, I'd leave my apartment at 7:30 to make sure I could be there by 9. And right. some days I got there at 8:30. Some days I got there at 8:15. Some days I got there at 8:55.
Right.
But then they always turned me loose around 2:00, and I'd be home in 10 minutes.
Well, when I was...
It's crazy.
When I worked at Cox, our offices were in Dunwoody, which is north of the city, on 285. Literally right off... 2 minutes off 285 was our office. And I would leave when I first started working there. I'd leave making an eight, and I'd hit 285 at 8:45, and then it would take me another 1 hour and 15 minutes to get around there. And my supervisor said, "Why don't you just wait and leave at 10? And I started doing that, and I'd get there 1 hour and 10 minutes, as opposed to 2 hours and 10 minutes, or 2.5 hours.
That's crazy.
And the thing about it, Russ, it was like every day there was this catastrophic wreck on 285. How can there be a bad wreck every single day that's causing this traffic? But my phone would be lit up with, red spots from, you know, on the GPS about all this traffic and wrecks and construction, and I don't want any part of that. That's why I turned that job down the first time, because they were going to make me move to Atlanta.
Mm-mm.
And I'm like, no.
Mm-mm.
No way. And luckily, Laura has no desire to live in Atlanta either.
Yeah.
That's probably never going
to
happen.
I'm guessing she has no desire to live in the wilderness either.
Probably not. I mean, because what you said about, Lindsay said about having to get to the grocery store.
No, yeah. No, she's not having any of it. But if I ever do manage to pull this off, this is, some people may get a chuckle out of this. If you grew up around here, you'll get a chuckle out of this. We were looking for a house way back when, and I was talking about that. She goes, no, you already brought me to a small town. I'm not going any smaller than Macon. I'm like, well, you know, by Georgia standards, baby, outside of Atlanta, Macon's really not a small town. But to her, it's
I mean, she grew up in Charlotte. Yeah.
It is. It's just, compared to Charlotte, it's a small town.
But I mean, like, we were talking like Milledgeville. Milledgeville's a nice little town to me. I mean, it's a nice size. Yeah. To me, it's a nice sized town. She probably thinks it's the sticks.
No, not really. But because there's a downtown area, and you have a 4-year university.
Yeah.
It's like schools with a 4-year university in it.
They have a different feel to it.
Because she went to Wingate, right?
Oh, okay.
And it kind of has that feel to it. Where,
very similar.
Yeah. You could say the same thing about Athens, right? Athens isn't a big town.
No, it's not.
But it's so much the university. It's a college town. That's the term. And like Milledgeville, the older I get, the more I realize it's a college town. College towns are a little bit different than small towns.
And she, Wingate, is it Wingate? Is that how you say it? I always thought it was Wingate. But
well, she always said Wingate.
Wingate. Is that, that's in the town, too. That's
Wingate, North Carolina.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
but it's near Charlotte, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's on the other side of Matthews, so it's probably like about an hour away. Yeah. Sure. But I don't know how we got on that topic, but it was just interesting because you made that comment about a house in the middle of nowhere, and I'm like, oh, my God, that would be so awesome.
Your eyes lit up.
Oh, my gosh. It would be great. Oh,
your spidey senses were all going off.
Man. You give me 2 days without human interaction. Oh, I'm so balanced and happy. Is that awful?
I get that. I get that sitting on my fat butt on the couch. Leave me the hell alone.
I got to get outside, man. Especially this time of year. I got to be outside.
Laura said, you know, Ben graduates next Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
His last day is tomorrow.
Wow.
And we're going to look at places to live in Clemson in July. And she's freaking out. He's going to be gone. My baby's going to be gone. And he was picking at me last night and picking and picking and picking. I mean, and they pick at me constantly, those two mm-hmm. boys. And I was getting a little irritated. And she said, you know, in 4 months, you're going to be missing that he's not here anymore.
Yeah.
And I said, damn, you're right.
Now, has the youngest one figured out he's got it on easy street if he plays his cards right?
Well, he's going to be, he has figured out he's going to miss his big brother is what he's figured out. Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're real close.
He'll get everything, though, now. Because mom and dad will, you know, that empty nest will kick in, and it's just like, I'm here, Mom.
He's going to be saying, leave me the hell. I don't want all this attention. Leave me alone.
Oh, we're out of time. Thanks for listening, as always. Chuck Oliver is the next Bill Shank Show at 3. We're live at Tommy's. Looking forward to that. And Braves baseball will get started with the pregame show at 5:25. From Daniel, I'm Russ. We'll do it again tomorrow at 11. Y'all have a good one.